Welcome to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. To learn more about us and our upcoming annual conference to be held March 13th to 15th, 2025 in Harrisonburg, Virginia, visit ciceroniansociety.org. I'm Christopher Annadale, and this is another episode focused on the theme of place. On this episode of The Sower, our place is Westchester, Pennsylvania, and here to tell us about Westchester is Claire Aguda. Claire works at the Russell Kirk Center for Cultural Renewal. She is currently a PhD student in the Great Books Humanities program at Faulkner University with a focus on intellectual history. Claire has worked in the conservative intellectual movement for several years. She was a fellow with the John Jay Institute and serves as a trustee for Harvest USA, as well as the Philadelphia Society. She is a friend of the Ciceronian Society, which she describes as the place where people take their faith seriously, take their work seriously, but they don't take themselves seriously. Claire, it's a pleasure to welcome you to The Sower.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about your place or places, as it were, Westchester, Pennsylvania, which is important to you, and other places, and your thoughts about localism and what it means to have a place. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. So before I talk about Westchester, I'd like to just share a few thoughts about place in general. I moved from New Orleans, Louisiana to Winter Springs, Florida when I was 6 years old. And I think that transition from a place where, you know, we have one of the best food cultures in the world to our suburban town where Outback was the best restaurant was a little jarring for me and my family. And I started thinking at that very early age about culture. What was culture? Was it a big thing to think about, like it's something that came from top down, or is it something that comes from bottom up? And I think I've concluded over the many years that I've thought about this question that largely it's something that comes from the bottom up. We think about, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville talking about place in this manner, you know, how the mores and the specific manners of a certain place influence the culture. And then the grouping of those cultures together into a state is something that forms, you know, from the bottom up in a free society. And even now, as I work at a place called the Russell Kirk Center, Dr. Kirk also really focused on place in a lot of his thinking. He was born in Plymouth, Michigan, but he called his ancestral home Piety Hill in Macosta, Michigan, and that's where he would return to every summer. And now with our work at the Kirk Center, we are building an academic village, which is where the Kirk House is to this day and also where the Kirk Library is. And it's something that I encourage all conservatives to visit. It's the pilgrimage that we all must take to Macosta at some point in time. But place is something that I think is inextricable from culture and how we think about who we are and how we're developed and how we relate to one another. So much of that is informed by our place.
Claire, do you see a tension between culture and economics? I mean, one of the factors that often involves parents moving across the country or moving to the suburbs elsewhere are various economic factors or the quality of schools, chasing after a job, which is a thing that academics will often do, moving to different regions. Is there a kind of a tension there between the desire to build up a local culture and make some choices about where to put down roots and the economic incentives or disincentives or sort of walls or channels that determine how and when people can actually make those choices?
Yeah, so I think in my knowledge of economics, the aspect I emphasize, as you kind of mentioned here, is the ability to have choice. And I think that there, even in my own life, there has been a blessing and a curse in having lived in many places. You get to be exposed to different places and cultures and people and traditions and parades and, you know, the different things that places emphasize, but then you lose that permanence that, you know, I've been able to watch some kids grow up in my church from the time when they were babies. You know, some in my church where I went to college are now graduated from college themselves. And that is a privilege to be able to go through life and have that generational memory in one place. But on the other side of that coin, you know, particularly in America, we have the advantage of being able to be a land of opportunity in so many places. And we, you know, there's blessing and curses to being a transient culture, to be people, you know, where I grew up in Central Florida, largely everyone was from somewhere else. Maybe 1 in 10 people had actually been born in Florida. Most people moved, they kind of put their kids through school there. And then once the kids graduated, they moved again. And that's becoming, I think, less so the case in Florida. I always would say that Florida didn't have as much of a culture, but I think I was just unaware of it. It's something that has been building, and there is a history there, even though it felt like it was a very transient community, very suburban, that people had moved there for economic opportunity and then left. So I don't necessarily see them as dichotomous, as a tension. You know, I think it's one of those instances where you have to make the prudent choice to bloom where you're planted. And sometimes that does mean, you know, you have to move a lot. I think of, you know, military families that have to move every couple of years, and, you know, you should still build relationships, even though you're only going to be there for a few years, because we're embodied people that need to be in community. So, you know, there is definitely the advantage to a long-term place, but also the advantage of exposure to many places. And those, you know, those opportunities are often economically motivated. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing.
Yeah, I take your point. It seems to me that in some ways, a sort of deep multi-generational attachment to place is the kind of thing you have to inherit. And then having inherited, you have to decide whether and in what way you might try to pass it on to the next generation. But then, you know, making use of some of the unique opportunities of our own place and time to, you know, travel around, to move to someplace else, to put down roots someplace different, seems like it presses the reset button in some way, or maybe in a limited way, on the sort of rootedness in this single place. America does seem like it's a place where this kind of ancestral sense is somewhat weaker than it is in other parts of the world. Don't you think so?
Oh, definitely. And I am probably, like a lot of your listeners, a big Anglophile. And even just thinking about the way America has operated from the beginning, it's always been a place where people have moved. Although there, I did hear from, I think it was Daniel Hann recently, who was talking about the writing of an author who makes an argument that the people that were involved in various sides of the English Civil War and people that were involved in various sides of the Revolutionary War and the various sides of the Civil War actually come from similar places within the UK. So they would, you know, let's say you were from Chester in England, and you moved to, I'm going to make this up, you moved to a particular place in Maryland. There's people that still moved within their communities. So there is, you know, sometimes that connection.
What you said about Central Florida reminded me of some of my life back in graduate school in Atlanta in the 1990s, right around the time of the Olympics. And we used to talk about Atlanta's civic identity in some ways as it's a place that is no place, because it is a place where everybody goes often for very, very commercial reasons, right? Because it is a place of booming prosperity and the like, but not a place that has deep roots in its past. It doesn't seem like every place can be like that, though. Do you think there's a tension in the American experience and culture today between places that have a past that they're proud of and are connected to, and places that seem to be a bit more transient in their sort of overall sense of identity?
There's a lot of thoughts on with this one. First, it's, you know, just as an amateur historian at this point, still working on being a professional one, you know, we have a complicated relationship with our past writ large. So to even appreciate, you know, this is what my grandfather did. This is what our town is proud of. This is the war that they fought in. You know, most of those small towns do still have war memorials, and they were hugely important to each of those towns. Whereas current generations, you know, war is bad. Why would I look and read this statue of this thing that I don't want to celebrate because all I've been told is war is bad? So, you know, there is a lack of a general posture, perhaps, towards incorporating the past into our lives. I know fans of Ciceronian Society are also fans of Edmund Burke often, and Burke's famous quote that society is a contract between those who are living and those who are dead and those yet to be born. You know, we are lacking that posture often.
Are there places that have just a transient sense of identity where the very nature of the place is people come here, they stay for a while, and then they go?
Yes. Yeah, so I think those places, as kind of was my posture towards Central Florida, it was a really transient place. But we moved there in 1996. And I would say now in 2024, it has adopted its own culture. Orlando City has a soccer team. Winter Park is famous for, farm to table restaurants. Like it's established its own culture, even as a transient place. Some of these things I do think just take time. Atlanta has an international population as a transient place, as you were saying when you were there in grad school, as its own important and unique and distinct city. I think we can think of Atlanta kind of like New York City. Atlanta is to Georgia what New York City is to New York. And so these places, even though they may be transient, full of transient people, can form their own unique senses of self and identity and culture. It's not always transitory and it's not always empty. Every place, I think, we can bring ourselves into and make that place flourish if we want. Instead of thinking of it as something that is a commodity, is a check off of this or that, it's multi-layered.
Let me press you with a hard question, if I might. We're friends here.
Yeah.
Do you think that a really robust localism is compatible with the kind of extensive freedom of movement, freedom of life plan, freedom to relocate to a new place at relatively low social and economic cost that we've come to depend upon as 21st century Americans? Is that compatible or incompatible with really having a kind of sort of deep, robust sense of place and locality?
I think it can be compatible, even if it's short term. I think we're seeing that, and there's a lot of like, let's say, younger people that are trying to get away from the suburbs and are trying to live in towns. They want to go walk to, a florist, or they want to walk to a market of some kind. People love the Saturday farmers markets. I think people are appreciating that sense of place and people and localism in a way that they haven't in the past several decades, but it's an intentional activity. Your community is not going to magically get dropped in your lap. You have to build it. And it's, something that can happen if you're in a short place, if you're motivated by economic reasons to move to a place, but it's something that the individual has to invest into to make happen and prioritize and think about.
That seems right to me. I think I agree. I'm wondering, what part of what drives my questioning here is my worry about the idea of place or local community becoming simply another sort of consumer product, a sort of lifestyle brand that one adds and, then changes as needed. One changes, brands of dishwashing detergent, and one might change one's sort of localist loyalty in a similar sort of way. What sorts of activities are involved in what you just referred to as sort of building community, where you begin to invest in and to build up institutions and maybe sort of senses of identity that goes deeper than this sort of local identity as consumer product, which I'm suggesting?
I think it's an emphasis on building what Tocqueville called the mediating institution. So this is going to be schools, fraternal organizations, the baseball team. If you're joining a local volleyball rec league, if you're joining the gardening club that the county library puts on, getting involved maybe in local politics. But the biggest one, I think, would be the church. I think the church is one of those places where, in the Bible, we're instructed, we have a lot of one another commands, love one another, et cetera. And I think the church is the place where that's often put into action. And that's where so much of community is built, because you're brought together, not necessarily by the same socioeconomic status. You're not brought together by your gender or by your age or by your race, but you're brought together by a creed. You're brought together by a shared belief, and you get to form relationships with people whom you might never have formed relationships with otherwise. And that is one of the most beautiful aspects, I think, of the church, is kind of that representation of community really lived out and lived together.
reminds me of something that only occurred to me after I finished recording an episode sometime back with Alan Mendenhall. We were trying to think together of different of institutions other than universities and university campuses around which people tend to build this sort of robust and lasting sense of community. And it was only after I'd finished recording the episode that it occurred to me, well, of course, the church ideally ought to be just exactly such a place. Your vision here of sort of church communities is, though, that they really are rooted in a particular place, as well as combining sort of creedal and more universal elements?
Definitely. And I will show my flag here. I am a Reformed Baptist, and our church is, I go to Christ Church Westchester, which is the only church on Church Street in the town of Westchester. And we are very much beneficiaries of the Nine Marks Network. And this is something that Mark Dever and the folks at Capitol Hill Baptist put on. And one of the things that they very much emphasize is the importance of the local church. So the local church, it's a real place where people are coming together multiple times a week, often week in and week out, to study the word and to live out their faith. And one of the benefits of our church particularly is we have our pastor and our church interns living on campus. So if you're walking by, they are there in the church. You know, they're there to, hey, how are you doing? What's your day? Kind of the old idea of a parsonage type situation. You know, we are, as I said before, we are embodied people in a particular place. And there's some, I used to live about a block from the church, and it was a wonderful time because I could run people from church often. And there was a gentleman who lived in kind of the state retirement home across the street. His name was Boyd Davis. He was in his 80s, and he had lived in Westchester his whole life. He could tell you such and such family lived at this house for this long. You know, the house that I lived in, for example, was owned by a family that had a painting company. And he could tell you every detail about them. And he was always, you know, very particular about the roses that we grew in the courtyard. And, you know, the benefit of that local church and living so close to that church is I would run into Boyd all the time. How are you doing today, Boyd? You know, what's going on? And that simple interaction, you know, with a fellow brother in Christ every day is so special. And that was possible because we're in a, you know, local church where I don't live in a suburb 30 minutes out from it, and I maybe see some people on Sundays. You know, having that local church building enables you to live day-to-day life together in a way that's only possible if people are, you know, nearby a specific place.
Well, that brings us to Westchester, which is mm-hmm. where we started. I mentioned this at the beginning. We haven't said much about it so far, but it seems that the church is a very important part of your experience of being in Westchester and from Westchester. What more would you like to share about it?
Yeah, so you are exactly right. I think the church is what drew me to Westchester, but there are a lot of ancillary benefits as well to living in Westchester. So I'll give you a little bit of the history takes and again, trying to be a historian here, but Westchester is the seat of Chester County, and Chester County is one of the three counties that William Penn established in his brief visit over to Pennsylvania. He was actually only here for about a total of 2 years, and it is called Westchester because it is west of the city of Chester. There is no East Chester. There is Westchester, which actually originally was called Turk's Head because there was a Turk's Head Tavern. And Westchester is one of those cities all outside Philadelphia that was about a day's ride. So if you rode for a whole day, now it's about a 45-minute drive, you know, without traffic. If it's traffic, maybe you would prefer the day's ride. But it's one of those towns that's, you know, the very extremities of greater Philadelphia. And it is a beautiful town. It's a lot of federal architecture. Every year, I believe it's HSN, but it might be QVC. One of the shopping networks, they film their Christmas parade in Westchester every year. This is the Westchester PR moment. I know it was recently recognized as a Main Street of America, like the top Main Street of America. It was also recognized as the top searched real estate market on Zillow in the whole country, apparently. And it's one of those towns that has kind of arrived. It went through a bit of a slump in the late 20th century, and then the Chamber of Commerce made an early effort in like the 90s, early 2000s to revitalize it. And now it's just booming. It's amazing to see all of the growth, and that there's a university here. So there's the Westchester University. So there's a vibrant social scene, lots of festivals and such. And it's a very walkable borough. I still don't know that I'm the best at defining exactly the difference between a borough and a town, but Westchester, the borough, you can probably walk across the whole of it in about 30 minutes. And everyone is out walking their dogs and all this stuff. So it's a beautiful place to live. It's, you know, an hour from DC, it's a couple hours from New York. It's a couple hours from DC, a couple hours from the beach, a couple hours from the mountains, close to the country, but close to the cities, kind of has the best of all worlds approach to it. And it reminds me a lot of kind of the sense of Americana. You know, coming from the South, you know, we would try to do, you know, pumpkins and flannels in the fall, and we would just be dying of heat. But here in Pennsylvania, you feel the seasons in that general American sense. And it also, parts of it also do remind me of England. There's a lot of rolling hills and stone walls, and you know, a lot of the things that were built were when Pennsylvania was a colony. So there is a lot there to be admired about Westchester. So I'm very thankful to be able to be here, but I am definitely here largely because I want to be a part of that local church.
It's marvelous. I what's going to stick in my mind, I think, is the image of the QVC or Home Shopping Network, a very big national institution, mm-hmm. having their parade through your town. Right. There's something there. So it seems to combine sort of both ends of the dialectic, right? The national commercial and the local particular.
Exactly. That's a great way of putting it.
One thing we haven't talked about, but which maybe has sort of come up around the peripheries of a few things that we've said so far, is something I've discussed with other guests on this podcast series about place, is the exclusionary elements of local community. Which seem to be, you know, at least a historical part of such things, without being unpleasant about it, without associating localism necessarily with hostility to outsiders. Is there some sort of necessary barriers to entry or difficulty sort of doing enough, investing enough so that you are accepted as, you know, one of the locals, part of the group? How do you see that playing into your sense of local identity, both in your historical work and also in your personal experience?
I'll answer perhaps with a couple of stories. So I will say, when I was a fellow at the John Jay Institute in 2016, outside of Philadelphia in a place called Ballard-Kenwood, I remember saying to myself, I will never move up north. I am a Southerner. I love many, many aspects of the South, you know, et cetera. And then, of course, as the Lord would have it, several months later, I was living in the North. And I think one of my hesitancies was, you know, oh, it's the Yankees up there. they're going to be mean. It's not going to be, you know, the same attitude. In Louisiana, there's a phrase, bring over your mama and them, like just say, come on over, bring everybody over. Like I was expecting the cold industrialized North. And I think my expectations were off. Definitely people have been very warm and welcoming, but there is a especially outside of Philadelphia, there's a sense of frankness. Like people are going to tell you exactly what they think, and you know, it won't be mean-spirited necessarily, but they're going to tell you. And in the South, we kind of can weave around a conversation and start something with a positive and end with a positive, but in the Philly area, they're just going to tell it to you straight. So that's something that I've come to particularly appreciate now, having lived here, but I also have tried to make the effort to adapt to that kind of style of living. It's, you can't say, you know, if I'm in France, I'm going to make very feeble attempts to speak French just to ingratiate myself to the people, because they appreciate that effort to, you know, be where you are, instead of I'm going to hold on to my own things. And one thing, as another example of this, is I'm not the biggest sports fan, and I did make the huge cardinal sin mistake of confusing the Phillies with the Eagles. And I was corrected very, very strongly many times until I finally got that right. And now I do know the difference between the Phillies and the Eagles, but it's something, you know, in terms of being an outsider or something in the extremity, I think it's, you know, often upon the emphasis is on the individual to ingratiate themselves often into that community. You know, I don't think we can expect things necessarily to be paid for us or given to us or, you know, why didn't so-and-so treat me this way? It's no, it's up to you to build those friendships and to build that place in the community. And if you make the effort of trying to adopt this particularities of that local place, it almost always goes off really well with appreciation for you trying to do that.
It's good to have experiences like that under your belt, certainly moving into a new place, though I think people have different levels of success, you know, breaking into a new community, sometimes thinking, you know, how long do I have to live here before I'll be, you know, one of the locals.
Yes. And that's something, you know, as I've reflected kind of about this and about place, you know, I think there's been a huge blessing to having lived in so many places and being able to travel to a few places. And I've been shaped and formed by all of those places, but you're also really missing something. If, you know, there's not one place you can call home. If there's, you know, for me, if someone asks me, where's your home? I kind of have a hard time answering that question because it's a lot of places. It could be, you know, where my parents are currently living, could be one of the many places I grew up. But on the other side of having lived in many places, one thing that I have found in my own life, even though there's not particularly one geographical place that I would immediately say it's home, is I have found a home in the church. You know, a lot of the places where I have lived, you know, growing up in Central Florida, we went to a Methodist church until they stopped talking about the Bible. And then we went to a Baptist church where I really grew in faith. And then when I was in college at Florida State and then I did graduate school there as well, the biggest part of my life was First Baptist Tallahassee. Though they were my church family. They were my people and I grew in faith there, grew in love of my fellow Christians there. And as we've discussed in this podcast, you know, the reason that I am largely in Westchester is because of my church today. You know, we are told that we're in this world and we're not of this world. And the place that I found to be my home in this world is the church. And that has been kind of the permanent thing in my life.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Let me ask you one last question, since you are a scholar and somebody who's been thinking for a long time deeply about place, who's worked with Tocqueville and Burke and material, and who's also got this sort of personal experience. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing a revived sense of localism and place in 21st century America?
I think some of the kind of the things we've talked about, I will take the historian angle again here, in that we, you know, a place didn't just come up from nowhere. You know, even Winter Springs, where I'd moved to, it was, I think, founded in 1986. It was founded 10 years before we moved there, and it was constantly being built. It had a history and it had a culture and it had people. You know, the neighboring town had had people, Oviedo had had people for 150, 200 years that were early cattle farmers, that when Florida was still, you know, the kind of the Southern Wild West. So there is culture and history to all of these places. We just have to have the mind, which something historian John Lukacs calls the historical consciousness. It's history as memory, and places are imbued with that memory. And it's, you know, that's the part of the past and culture and place that I've been thinking about for a long, 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 long time. Maybe well, maybe not, but trying to think about how we can be in these places. And one thing that I'm excited about and that I hope will revive this sense of place for a lot of people is the upcoming semi-quincentennial. So it's the 250th of the Declaration is coming up in July 2026. And I remember my dad, who, you know, is a second generation immigrant, largely, you know, his dad was from the Philippines, and his mom, her family came from Germany and Ireland. They were extremely patriotic. And my dad graduated high school in 1976 for the bicentennial. And that's something that left a mark on my family. They went to go visit Mount Vernon. They have pictures of my pawpaw, again, Louisiana, so P-A-W, P-A-W, is with statues of George Washington. And my grandfathers had both served in World War II. And they actually, speaking of place, they realized when my parents were married that they had both served on either side of the same island in the South Pacific. And they realized that only once my parents got together. Which is very, very cool. Very fun fact, again, involving place. But I think, you know, I'm hopeful that the upcoming 250th will renew in us a sense of American ideals that have continued through the generation and Lord willing will continue, you know, that we'll be a republic if we can keep it because of these shared ideals. And I hope that it will bring about a sense of patriotism that the last time I saw it in my life was after 9/11. And, you know, every house in the street had an American flag on it. So that's something that I hope will renew interest at the local levels. What is our town doing to celebrate the 250th? What is our, you know, what is our county doing? Perhaps what is the state doing? I am hopeful, I'm maybe in a Pollyanna way, about, you know, that reviving a sense of historical memory that will help us to live our lives, renewing the best of the past, not to relive the past, but to bring the best of our past and shape it and adapt it for our present, for the future, for future generations. Because if we, you know, lose the American ideals nationally and the local sensibilities, you know, we will have really lost something. So I'm, you know, we should all hopefully pray for a revival of local, we will all hopefully pray for a revival of localist ideas and maybe a general sense of patriotism as well.
That emphasis on hope is a great place to wrap up. I'm really grateful for that. That's a good note to end on. My guest on this episode of The Sower has been Claire Aguda of Westchester, Pennsylvania. Claire, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Sower, please share it with a friend and rate us 5 stars. Go to our website, ciceroniansociety.org, for more information about our activities and mission.